Happy 4th, everybody. All right, here we go. We've got Alex Caruso on his career. What's up with the Bulls and getting into fights a couple times? Nothing too crazy. And life advice. Enjoy the holiday.
It's Ryan Russillo podcast presented by FanDuel. The road to the NBA Finals starts now, and FanDuel is the best place to get in on the action. Right now, you can check out the new and improved Quick Bets, which are back and better than ever for the NBA playoffs and FanDuel. Find what you're looking for faster and easier with more props right at your fingertips. You can check out live bets like 3-minute markets and exclusive live bets like quarter player props, player assist combos, and more. So download the app today and bet with FanDuel, official partner of the NBA. The Ringer is committed to responsible gaming, so please visit rg-help.com to learn more about the resources and helplines available and listen to the end of the episode for additional details. Must be 21 and older, 18 plus in DC, and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit rg-help.com. This episode is brought to you by La Quinta by Wyndham. La Quinta by Wyndham has everything you need for your next business trip. From free high-speed Wi-Fi to fitness centers to free bright side breakfast with fresh waffles, eggs, and more, book direct at lq.com. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Alex Caruso, the Bulls, hanging out with us. Great story. Great success story. I'm really happy for him and all the stuff that's gone down. Incredible defensive player on top of everything else. A lot of stuff that I want to get to. Alex, when you are at this part of the season with all the free agency stuff, the trades, like, how much do you pay attention to it? Do you grade the trades with teammates or buddies when you see another team make a move?
It maybe not as in depth as some of these big networks do, but I mean, there's definitely basketball talk between teammates and just in general. Most of the league, I'd say probably majority of the league, at least in my experience, are like basketball junkies. Like me and DeMar texted all throughout the playoffs just about different series, how we thought it was going to go, and then just randomly we'll text each other out of the blue and be like comparing somebody's careers, like who had the better career, who would you take here and here. So most of it gets talked about, but not quite to the scrutiny or in depth of maybe some of these networks or radio shows do.
I don't know how much you can share because, you're in a league with other people, but what are the texts like with you and DeRozan when you're watching? Is there one team you were both right on, both wrong on, like as it was developing? What are those moments like when you guys are watching it?
It's pretty 50-50. Usually it was just, it'll be stuff about like matchups of series during the playoffs, calling how many games a series is going to go, just talking about different guys' games and how it, they either do or don't fit, which, we won't get into particulars about that. But I think he called the finals. Finals was 5 games, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
He called 5. I thought it was going to go 6. It's just a lot of fun for us because he's as much a basketball junkie as anybody. And I think he knows that I'm the same way. So we get into deep conversations about basketball. We done a lot of stuff during the year, like a couple team flights, like do your top 5 like small forwards all time, point guards, stuff like that. It's just for us it's a drug to just talk about basketball.
What did you guys think about Miami's run considering how your playing game went? I'm just wondering, like, if I was wrong about them, I just didn't think they were talented enough to make it to the NBA finals.
Yeah.
But what did you think as that was happening?
They just kind of hoodwinked everybody throughout the whole year. Like they almost took on, the persona of Jimmy, because Jimmy kind of, he doesn't coast through the regular season. Like he's still, an all-star caliber player, but like when he gets to the playoffs, he turns it up a notch. And like their team this year almost like took on that persona, because when we played him during the regular season, I want to say we were 3-0 against them, and in one of the games we played at home, like we beat them pretty easily, as far as NBA basketball standards. But man, they got hot at the right time. Guys started trusting what they were doing, and then the matchups I thought were really good. And you hear people talk about that in the playoffs so much, like matchups matter. I thought they just kept getting good matchups, and then guys just played. Different guys each series kind of stepped up for him. Duncan didn't really have too much of an impact at all going into the playoffs. And then all of a sudden he has a couple big series. Gabe Vincent started playing incredible in that New York Knicks series. And then they just, you know, they got steady play from Bam, K-Lo, Jimmy did what Jimmy did to kind of, you know, get them through the Milwaukee series. It was just an incredible run. You know, it was one of those things where you get hot at the right time, like you see sometimes in March Madness, but, you know, it's even more impressive because, you know, they're series. It's not one and done games.
I think sometimes teams or players will like look at who they lost to and then go, oh, hey, you know, because your regular season probably was disappointing. There's certainly injuries, whether, you know, the Lonzo thing's another thing that I want to ask you about at some point. But I there'll be teams or certain guys that'll be like, well, look, we were that close. It could, the play-in game could have gone our way, and they went to the NBA Finals. So that tells us by proxy like that we're close. When I hear that stuff, and I'm kind of like, I don't know if you should be doing that. I'm wondering. Go ahead.
No. There's. I know exactly what you're talking about. It's like the butterfly effect. Like you put yourself in that situation. But I mean, I'll take it even one step further back. Like as soon as we lost the play-in game, the season's over. You know, I'm thinking about the two games we lost to Orlando this year. Game against Oklahoma City at home, we lost. Game at San Antonio early in the year, we lost. Like, there's four games right there where I can count where it's like those are probably, you count them as wins on the schedule. You know, maybe OKC is a little out of the ordinary than those other two teams, but we lost to the Rockets at home in a bad game. I didn't play in that; I was sitting out, but we, you know, still have plenty of talent to beat them. Mess around with the game, they get hot late, lose a game. Like, that's four games where we go from being the whatever seed, what were we, the 11, to where we're maybe not even in the play-in. And then it's like you don't even have to worry about winning those two games. So that's kind of where my mind went whenever I saw, you know, once the season was over. But you can't just erase and fill and put your name in there and be like, yeah, we would have beat Milwaukee and then beat New York and then beat Boston. Like, that's a tall task to do. And you kind of have to give Miami their credit for going in there and doing it.
The Bulls get off to that really good start a couple of years ago, you know, and then it was like, all right. And it was fun. There was a stretch there where it was really fun. Like, I'd watch you guys on a Saturday night at home in Chicago. It really is still one of the best places.
Yeah.
The atmosphere for all of it.
The best.
It really is, you know, and I'm like watching it, and I felt like Bulls fans in a way were deprived because the Derrick Rose thing, then the Butler split up, and then they're like trying to figure out it again on the fly. The LaVine thing works out. The DeRozan contract's incredible. The Vooch trade, you know, it's a tough one, but I get he's a talented guy. Then you come along, Lonzo's there, and it felt like, hey, you know what? The Bulls are at least going to be competitive. Between the injuries, the second half of last year and then this year, like, do you have any sense of who you are as an organization, like who you are as a team?
I mean, I do. I think I have the vision of what it's supposed to be. And, you know, obviously missing Zoe is a huge piece of that. Just because, you know, like we said, I think we shocked everybody in the league when we were sitting at first place halfway through the year, that first year when everyone signed in the offseason. And it was just clicking. Like, Zoe's game fits so well next to DeMar and Zach and Vooch. And then we had, you know, great role players, young players that, you know, Pat Williams, Io played probably better than a rookie would his first year. And then Kobe White just continuing to grow and get better for us that year. I thought we had a really, you know, when you look at all the boxes you need to check for being a good team, I thought we had a lot of them checked. Could score in different ways, could play in half court. Zoe, me on defense, kind of disrupting, letting us get out in transition, getting easy buckets there. And then, you know, we just, everybody that, you know, whether you want to call it deficiency or maybe just, you know, a skill that guys aren't as good at, like, we kind of covered each other up in the areas that we needed to. And it just, for me, it was flowing really good. And then obviously, like I said, you know, unfortunate situation with Zoe where there's kind of, you know, just a bunch of question marks around that. But I think as far as who we want to be, I think we know who we want to be. You know, it's just professional sports. It's about showing up every day and doing it. You know, like, you can be at your best. And we kind of proved that the two seasons. Like, the first season I was here, we beat all the teams that were 500 and below. Like, our record against them was phenomenal, and we couldn't beat any of the good teams. And then last year, our record against the top 6, 7, 8 teams, or maybe even less, like top 5, 6 teams of each conference was above 500. And then the teams that were you know, below 500 on record, we struggled against. So it's kind of just that putting it all together thing, finding the roles to make up for the holes that we're missing with Zoe, and then just competing and playing every night, because that's, you know, that's half the battle of professional sports.
How is Lonzo?
He's been great when I've seen him, as far as, you know, spirit and going to work. You know, that's kind of all you can do in that position. You know, you can't force anything when it comes to injuries, right? Like the body has to heal, and then you can get back out there and play. And that's one of those things where it's been healing. And then I think there's been setbacks, and he's trying to get back to healing again. For his sake, I hope he can just play basketball again, man. Cause you know, going back to what we said about me and DeMar, I think he's the same way, where he's just a hooper at heart. Like he would just play basketball at the park and play pickup with his friends, if that was kind of, you know, what his life path was. He just happens to be really, really good and play in the NBA. But yeah, for him, man, I hope he can just get back and play, because I know how much he enjoys it. And, you know, he's a really good player when he gets out there.
I love your story. I think we all love underdogs. And, you know, coming out of school, you know, granted, I watched you in college, you were like, all right, you know, undrafted. And I know you had to mess around with G League a little bit. And then I don't remember the game, but I just remember, like, there was a moment where you were with the Lakers. You're like, wait, is he actually kind of good? What was the moment for you? I mean, some people are honest with the answer. Some people aren't. You know, some people say, I never had any doubts. And other people are like, I didn't know. You know, like, what was that path like for you, of kind of understanding how you fit into the NBA?
Yeah, I think honestly, it was kind of in stages, even from, you know, going all the way back to like high school. Like I was a good player as a young kid. Like there was like whispers of me being on varsity early as a high school player. And then I was like 2 weeks on JV. I got bumped up. So I played 4 years of varsity high school basketball. And then like into my junior and senior, I was like, oh, I could probably play D1 basketball. And then at the end, it's like, oh, I could play high major D1 basketball. And then once I got to college, it just reset, because I was skinny. I was, you know, trying to catch up athletic wise, trying to catch up to the speed of the game. First 2 years, I'm just trying to get on the court, play on the team. And then like later, and it's like, oh, I could probably play professional basketball. And then, you know, at the end of my senior year, it's like, oh, I have 10, 11 NBA team workouts. And then from there, it's just make the decision if I want to try and, you know, make it to the NBA and like make my stamp there, go overseas and start a career. And kind of just decided like, I might as well, like, I'm not going to be able to live myself if I don't stay here and give it a shot and see what happens. And I just kept getting better and better. That summer league where I actually posted about it. I think it was House of Highlights had something about our summer league team that 2017 year, the year that Zoe, Josh Hart, Kuz all got drafted. B.I. was on the team. Zubac, Thomas Bryant, me, Vanderblue. We had a bunch of guys. It was just a crazy team. And they all got hurt, and then I started playing really well. I had that kind of breakout game against De'Aaron Fox and Buddy Hield and the Kings. Then we get to the two-way, and it's like, my first actual like real NBA experience, right? Like I went to training camp with the Thunder, but I didn't really get to do anything. I was the last guy on the training camp roster. And it just slowly but surely, I like would like just play, just kind of like naively just play basketball and kind of do what I could do. And then I realized, I was like, oh, I could play here. Like this is something I could actually do. And the confidence just grows. And I just kept getting better and better. I would probably say at the end of my first year on two ways, probably the moment where I was like, yeah, I can play in the NBA and I need to be here. Cause I kind of felt like I maxed out playing in the G League after a full year of G League and a full year of two way. I wasn't able to take the steps to get better at that point. Like I needed reps playing at NBA speed against NBA size, you know, with just the difference between the G League and the NBA. So I'd say probably the end of my first year in two-way, that was when I was like, yeah, this is where I'm supposed to be.
Shout out to Vanderblue, by the way.
Yeah, VZ, he's, dude, G League, one of the all-time great G League players. Dude, just maxed out the G League for a handful of years.
His Wikipedia is like an encyclopedia when you have to keep up with all the teams. Cutter, currently. by the way, I believe. All right. So give me this answer. This is what I really want. Give me the transition from two-way, who's this guy again, teammate of LeBron, to then LeBron's like, oh, wait, this guy's going to be somebody I have in the rotation, somebody I actually trust, you know, does the right things. What is that relationship transformation like?
That was, so I want to say Bron's first year was my second year on two-way. Because the first year, so he, that's right, because they made the trade in B.I. and Josh and all them. Wait a second. I'm trying to remember now. Bron's first year was
18, 19.
Yeah. So my second year on two way. Yeah. Because 17, 18, 18, 19. Yeah. It was kind of the same thing towards the end of the year. You know, the team wasn't, you know, in the spot where they wanted to be or like push for a playoff spot just before the playing game. So I got called up and Bron, so he's playing because he just is a freak and plays basketball every day of the week. And we started playing together, and my IQ on like what I was seeing and how it he was seeing was kind of similar. Obviously, he's a lot smarter at that time and like still now, but I was able to read the game based off of the openings that kind of how teams would guard him. You know, like I'm coming off a pick and roll with him setting. They're not worried about me. They're worried about him. So I'm just walking to the lane, shooting layups. When he has the ball, everyone's staring. I'm a good cutter, so I'm making off-ball cuts. He's a phenomenal passer, so he's hitting me easy layups. It was just one of those things where my game really complimented him. And the things that I could do, I think, just fit in well. And I think he started to realize that over those last couple games, when there maybe wasn't as much, you know, high IQ basketball being played around him that season as he would like. And I think it was kind of a fresh take for him to realize like, oh, this guy knows what he's doing. He knows how to play. Like he knows how to play the game. You might as well keep him around. And you know, obviously that then I went to summer league and kind of moseyed my way through the second summer league after my second year in two way, just like, all right, I'm ready to play in the NBA, and then I signed with him for those 2 years.
Does he get mad at you as a teammate? Like, I'm sure you've had all sorts of teammates. Everybody that I've ever heard that coach or play with him, like, no, this isn't BS. Like, he really does see the game in a special way. And you're even smiling right now. So, you know, for the audio audience.
Wolf, eventually there's going to be a wolf. Like, so many people say it. Like, it's got to right. be true.
Yeah, what is that? Do you have a story? Is there an example of that where you were like, whoa? Because I had a coach like recently explain to me, he said how like LeBron was understanding the TV timeout length so that he would sub himself out.
Yeah, knowing for sure. It's calculated.
He would know I'm not missing a ton of game time, but in real time, it's like I'm getting two extra breaks.
Yeah, he'll sub out the first. We used to do that. He would sub out first. AD would play the whole first quarter. He would sub out, you know, the last, I don't know, was it 30 seconds before the 2 minute timeout? So then he's getting, right. you know, the 2 minutes and 15 seconds of game time. That's what he's missing. But in totality, he's getting like 8 minutes of 10 minutes of real rest. But I think the thing for me and Rondo had a little bit of play in this too, was just the level of detail on scouting, you know, whether it was knowing, you know, coaches' tendencies after timeouts, whether it was knowing, you know, different plays that these guys have been running the beginning of the third quarter, different personnel stuff. Like that's one of the things that I think has helped me become, you know, one of the better defenders in the NBA and first team all defense last year, was just the knowledge of all the people in the league. Like I know who likes to go left. I know who likes to go right. I know who doesn't want to get to the rim and wants to shoot in the mid range. I know what happens if I crowd this guy and make him turn baseline. Like all these little details about guys that I learned from, you know, the details of Frank Vogel's scouts, you know, the schemes that we used to come up with when I was in LA, and then just the knowledge of Bron. Like he would just add stuff here and there that was just like, oh, I didn't know that. It's like, oh, I guess that guy does only like to go left and shoot pull-ups, or if he goes right, he's going to get to the rim. Like little stuff like that where I didn't understand or I didn't know that you could have that in depth of knowledge. You know, it was almost like going from like the G League or college to an NBA level of like mental processing, to where I was like, oh, I can get better in that area too. And that was something for me that was really fun, because we talked about before, I'm a basketball junkie. So like if I can know stuff that, you know, other people don't know, or these guys that I'm guarding don't know, that's just, you know, another bullet in the chamber for me. And that was something for him that I was really, really impressed by.
All right, let's talk about some of the guys that you go up against, because I don't always remember, especially as we're almost into July, like what your primary assignment on the opposition would be all the time. But you were incredible defensively this year, and you could see it. And then you look at the numbers, and you're going, man, like this is like another level of what are you doing? So do they put you on SGA?
Yeah, I mean, everybody, and I've guarded everybody. SGA,
okay, so
he's one of the tougher ones in the league that doesn't get talked about enough.
I think he moves so well on the court, but there's also this thing where I feel like he's just going to get deeper than you want him to, and you're not really going to be able to do anything. And then he stops and he goes slower than everybody else, like at the rim, still calculating like which angle he's going to take off from. There's just so much that's being thrown at you that's beyond just, hey, I'm really quick off my first step and power dribble in. You're right. Like I wanted to ask you about him because the whole palette of what he can throw at you seems ridiculous.
I mean, he averaged 30 a game in the NBA and 24, 25, I think he is. Like that's not from predetermining anything. Like he can shoot threes. He can shoot in the mid range. He can get fouled. He can play in the little 6-8 foot floater range, and then he can get to the rim and finish. One of the things you see with some of the best scorers in the league is like they'll average 5, 6, 7, 8 free throw attempts per game. So right there, they're already at, you know, they're shooting 80%. They're at 6 points there. So now they're getting 24. Let's say they make 3 threes. Right. Now they're only making 5 other shots in the game outside of, you know, their free throws and their threes. And he's one of the ones that, you know, the way Mark Dagnall set up that offense for, you know, it's just read, react, create closeouts. And playing off closeout as the defender in the NBA is like one of the hardest things to do, right? Because you're usually traveling a handful of steps, stopping on a dime, and then this guy who knows what he wants to do, who can, you know, now that we're in the current NBA, can shoot threes, can dribble, and can pass. Like that's how OKC is set up. It's hard for you to take all that away and then worry about this guy that's shooting, you know, whatever his splits are and scoring 30 a game. But he just makes great reads, you know, whatever you kind of give him, that's what he takes. And then even then, if you're like square in front of him, he's stronger than he looks. And he's 6'6", 6'7" with a whatever wingspan, you know, like I'm 6'5" with a 6'5" wingspan. Like I have decent size for a guard in the league, but he's more of like a big guard wing size playing point guard. So he can kind of just, I don't think he really has a deficiency in his game. And that's kind of what makes him, you know, that's what makes the guys in the league that are elite. That's what makes them so hard to guard, is because they can score at all three levels. They can get fouled. And then the guys that don't predetermine what they're going to do, that's when, for me as a defender, it's like, okay, now you got to pay attention and really try to like make life hard for them, or else they're just going to get 30, 35.
I imagine you'd still rather deal with him than like getting switched to Luka, right?
Dude, I mean, there's no right answer to that, you know. Like, I mean, they both have, it's a different game for each of them, right? Luka's a little more methodical, almost like Joker, where it's like it lulls you to sleep, like it's almost lazy. And then he uses his size. I mean, Luka's 6'7", 200 something pounds. Like he's a big guy. Like that's why he takes, when you put little guards on him, he just takes him to the post and just, you know, turns into Dirk. But yeah, I mean, there's, I don't think that there's a right answer. That's like asking me any, you know, any guard all-star in the league.
Yeah, right.
It's like, there's no right answer.
Right. Yeah. I guess it shouldn't, because that's not fair. Because then you know, if you're like, actually, Luke, I kind of figured him out a little bit. You know.
I mean, I know stuff about everybody, but there's, you know, I mean, there's a class of 10, 15 guys in the league where it's like, you can play perfect defense. They still are probably going to score.
Where's Jamal Murray on that right now? Cause he's everybody's favorite now that he has a ring.
Yeah, man. Jamal's been so good for a couple of years now. He's one of the underrated guys in the league that doesn't get talked about enough, probably just because, you know, Joker is such a good player and like such a historically, you know, he's going to be first ballot whenever he's done playing. But Jamal, man, the tandem of them two and the sets that they run in Denver, it's just hard for you to stay in front because Jamal's another guy that can kind of do it all. Like he can shoot threes off the dribble. He can shoot threes off the movement. He can get to the mid range and shoots his little 1 foot kind of quirky, like half spin. And then he can get into the paint and he can get fouled. So, you know, for him too, the dudes that play in Denver, like their conditioning's just, you know, elite, like just naturally, like they have that little bit of advantage. And the way that Denver plays, like there's so much movement and there's so much off ball stuff. And Joker is such a good passer that everything's live. So like you never rest on defense, and Jamal is just moving. Like people talk about Steph moving, and Steph's movement is like kind of off ball mostly. But they're running stuff for Jamal to where it's like he's faking a back screen, slipping it, coming off a pin down with Joker. And it's like if you go under, he's gonna shoot the three. If you trail, he's just gonna keep going. Joker might fake it to him. Now he's throwing it over the top. It's just there's so much freedom for them in that offense that it makes it hard to predict, and it makes it hard to kind of like funnel guys into areas.
All right. I love that answer because now we're talking about something too where, you know, I've been probably yelling at this point too long, but just, you know, the Golden State part of it where they keep playing to the end of the shot clock, right? Play through the possession, just keep moving. Like, why would you run your first thing? And then if it doesn't work, then everybody stop. But like, it's also going to be nights where you don't have it. There's going to be plenty of possessions throughout the season, hundreds and hundreds of possessions where you just don't feel great about it. But are you surprised, even with 30 NBA teams, that they'll still feel like there's certain teams where you go and thinking about your defensive game plan where you're like, you know what? These guys kind of run the first action and then it's kind of over. And that's what they do. I think it's surprising, at least for me, from the outside, that I'll see, even at this level, a handful of teams where I'm like, you guys can't get your guys to just keep moving still. And I don't know. It seems like just there's some offenses that are a little easy to prepare for.
I think that's still, it's a bit of a generational transition thing because a lot of, you know, teens basketball, even earlier than that, it was all based around like, getting your guy the ball in an isolation and letting him get his shot up. And there's still a lot of that in the NBA, but majority of it now, just, you know, people are looking at the analytics, they're looking at the stats. It's like the more passes you make per possession and the longer you wait in the shot clock, more times than not, you shoot a higher points per possession, or you're going to score and shoot better percentages. We've talked about that with our team before with the Bulls. It's like, the times we come down and we've had like, I don't know how many passes it was, but Billy's had his analytics guy put it up on the screen before. It was like possessions where it's like over 3.5 passes or something like that. We shoot like 15% higher. It's like, it's just about committing to that and making sure, you know, you're trying to do that every time. And obviously it's an imperfect game, right? There's some games where you're going to have more fast break possessions, and some games you're going to play against a team that doesn't crash. So you're going to have to play against a half court offense and the numbers might be skewed. But for the most part, that's kind of the most potent offenses in the leagues. The one that rely on movement and the ones that can, you know, space the floor correctly and just open it up for guys to get easy shots inside and then shoot threes.
Okay. I want to ask about two plays. I was watching the clips again this morning. Mm-hmm. Were you more mad about the Grayson Allen foul or Cam Payne after the Chris Paul LeBron thing?
Oh, wait a second. The Chris
Paul. You were in Phoenix. LeBron was at the free throw line. Chris Paul went to box him out. He took shooter, but he took it from behind. LeBron fell down. May not have been as hurt as it looked. I know he's never done that before.
I know you're talking
and
about.
Then Cam Payne chucks you. And then you throw the ball back at campaign. I would admit campaign, I'd have a hard time with him pushing me down to the ground. And then Montrez came over and pushed Cam, and then Payne flopped. It was, see, like Grayson that was nasty and dirty and dangerous, and it
Yeah, no, 100% that one. Okay. 100%. Dude, I was just, that was the thing about that season too, is like I was just coming off of like a little hamstring tweak at the end of like middle of December, and I was just getting back into it, and like my second or third day back to practice, I got COVID. So then I missed another 10, 13 days. And then that was my second game back after COVID. And like, team was doing so good beginning of the year. Now we're kind of hitting a wall, and it's like, I need to get back out there. Like, I can somewhat like right the ship and help some of these guys that are like struggling with some of the stuff we're trying to do. And then second game, go down and just, obviously it happens. You know, the crazy thing people don't talk about enough, this is probably a pat on the back for me, it's like I finished the game. I finished the game. I actually made a three. I don't think I made a, I didn't shoot very well. And then I think Chris was guarding me, Middleton, and he was playing so far off because my wrist was obviously just, it was taped and it looked bad. And I just ego shot it and it went in. And after the game, I'm like dapping everybody up left-handed. And I'm like, ah, dude, this is going to be sprained for like a week. Like, this isn't going to be good. Like, I'm not going to be able to play. And then I wake up the next morning, Orlando, and I can't brush my teeth. And like, I try to take a shower and I can't like touch my body at all. I'm like, yeah, that's not a sprain. Something's not right with that. And then I missed 6.5 weeks.
I was so mad. I was watching at home. And at this point, you know, I've kind of had it with Grayson Allen. And like, what did you go past him in the line? I forget.
When talking about
after the game, when you're dapping up everybody, you had to have, right? Well, there's no, it's
line.
Not high
there's
school.
No line in professional sports.
Yeah, what am I talking about? When you said the when you said the dap part, I was like, oh.
Well, I because I know a couple guys on the team. Right. Like I obviously know Chris, and then I played against Bobby in college a couple of times. It's just like a checking in, like, you know.
Yeah, right, right. What am I thinking? I don't know why I like let that
stay healthy kind of thing. My wrist and I'm lying saying it's okay.
Well, can't wait to see you guys back out there. I know that it feels like the season just ended in a way, but maybe it's felt longer for you, but it's been fun seeing your career take off, man, in a great city like Chicago. So thanks.
Yeah, of course, man. Thanks for having me on. It's felt like a year and a half since the season's been over for me.
Slightly longer. Slightly longer.
It's felt like forever.
Well, we'll see. We'll see how many new teammates you have. Thanks again. Yeah.
Appreciate it, man.
This episode is brought to you by La Quinta by Wyndham. La Quinta by Wyndham has everything you need for your next business trip. From free high-speed Wi-Fi to fitness centers to free bright side breakfast with fresh waffles, eggs, and more, book direct at LQ.com. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine.
This episode is supported by State Farm. So look, a little rock hit your dude's windshield on the highway. And at first, you're like, what is that? I'm like, oh, it's just a little mark. Nope. Now, by the end of the ride, it's a big crack. And it'd been a while. So I check out the State Farm app. I go, hey, this is what happened. And the funny thing is I was like, do I want to go app first or do I call? Old school guy, probably should call. It's like, let's check out the app. Not only did it take a minute to get done, they set up the glass replacement. They told me the estimate ahead of time, said, you want to go ahead with it? And I was like, now I understand. It's all in front of me, all done. I don't even have to talk to anybody. That's how efficient the insurance game has become. But really, the only words you need to remember are, like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. State Farm has options to fit your unique insurance needs, meaning you can talk to your agent to choose the coverage you need, have coverage options to protect the things you value most, file a claim right on the State Farm mobile app, just like I did, and even reach a real person when you need to talk to somebody. The app was so good, I didn't even need to do that. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Learn more at statefarm.com.
This episode of the Ryan Russillo Podcast is brought to you by McDonald's. McDonald's French fries changed my life. They taught me to want. They taught me the taste of anticipation. There's no wrong way to eat a French fry from McDonald's. Unless you're eating my French fries. Get your favorite McDonald's fries today. This episode is brought to you by Modelo. Modelo knows it's not about whether you win or lose. It's about cheering louder, traveling further. It's about showing up no matter what. Because you are a fighter and Modelo is your reward. An ice cold reward. Rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Shop delivery or pickup options near you at ordermodelo.com. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
You want details? Fine. I drive a Ferrari 355 Cabriolet. What's up? I have a ridiculous house in the South Fork. I have every toy you can possibly imagine. And best of all, kids, I am liquid. So, now you know what's possible. Let me tell you what's required.
Life advice, lifeadvicerr at gmail.com. What up, Steve? What up, Kyle? All right, here we go. The first one here, dating app issues here. Had my wife create a dating app profile to look at my friend's accounts. Huh. Okay.
What?
Let's get into it. Let's just read it. Hey, guys, no basketball comp to give you, but my character comp is a mix of Kramer and Logan Roy.
What?
Yeah. Do we discuss it or we just keep moving?
I don't have it in me.
Okay. Which means I have a ruthless drive for what I want, but have some outlandish ideas and character quirks. This might have been what led to my current predicament. Okay. He did a good job of explaining it. I just don't think of those two people as like, you know what I mean? It'd be like, I'd say avocado and something else, but everybody uses avocado and everything. It'd be like hot sauce on cookies and cream ice cream. Like, it's just a weird kind of
like a fish and a bird. It's like, I don't, those are just, they're two different
or
things.
A fish and a bird. Yeah. Good. Good. I have a few friends who have been single for years now. And when me and my wife ask if they are seeing anyone, it is always no. I ask if they are on any dating sites and they say yes, but they aren't having any luck on them. Curious as to what they would write as their profile and what photos they use. Me and my wife decided to snoop on them after a few drinks at Jazz Fest. Because you have to verify you were using, you're real using social media. I couldn't just create a burner account. So she created a profile and we quickly got to work. Knowing their age and where they live, we were able to use the settings to narrow down the number of people we had to swipe to find them. It was actually super fun to do together and provided some of the deepest laughing I've done in a long time because of how stupid these profiles were. Well, must be nice, happy guy, huh? Some people are out there fucking still on the hunt.
Yeah. Tooth and nail. Come on,
actually,
man.
That does sound like a good like husband-wife activity. But
it is,
are,
yeah. Yeah. Right. Anyway. Might have to get in on that.
As expected, maybe not. Let's see where the story goes. As expected, my friend's profiles were not interesting, bad pictures, and now I get why they are getting no play. No play. The problem arises because one of these guys saw her profile in the hour or so it was up and sent me a voice note saying, I'm sorry to bring it up, but I saw your wife on Hinge.
Big swiper, these guys. Swiping at all hours.
That is a Kramer-esque predicament. She's on Hinge? I told him we were looking for a different friend's profile together as a couple, but he replied, let me know if you need to talk.
Oh, man.
Now you're the guy everyone feels bad for.
Right. I'm concerned he brings it up to others. I don't want my wife to look like she is a wandering eye or others to know I'm snooping on their dating profiles. How can I get this guy to never bring it up to anyone? I feel like telling someone to not tell anyone makes them want to tell someone more. Yeah. I mean, totally. If you go with option B, where you're like, look, my wife and I created the profile so we could look at all of your profiles. So we could, you probably want to leave out the part where you're hysterically laughing at everybody's lack of companionship, but they're definitely telling other people. There's no, that's not staying in the vault, right? I mean, you may have that one vault friend. Like I have one that's like super vault and I'll go like, wait, you not telling me this is actually a like way worse than you betraying the person you don't even like. Like, you need to tell me this, right? So anyway, this is going to be shared. So there's a downside there. I mean, the ultimate downside is that Zion Williamson is a match for your wife. And then all of a sudden you're like, wait, what's going on here? So that's that, we can eliminate that one. I don't know. Can't you and your wife just laugh hysterically about this? Like, doesn't it really only matter that you two know it? Or I don't know, like Cerruti, I guess, like knowing you and your wife and how I would say you're very I don't know, like
this is something we would do.
Yeah, this is something really? You would do.
Yeah, it is.
You're just compatible. Compatible is what I'm thinking of, right?
You're very compatible. You would do it. And then I would think if it went down that road with one of your buddies, you would just tell your buddy, hey, dude, this is what happened. I guess he would believe you. But I also think there's a part of you and your wife where you would think it was the funniest thing ever that people thought she was actually stepping out and on Hinge.
Like, no,
I
don't.
You wouldn't care.
I don't think. No, I don't know. I wouldn't go that far. I think we wouldn't think it was that big. Like, we would keep it a secret that we were snooping on them. And as soon as we got caught, we'd be like, yeah, because the lesser of two evils, I'd rather my friend know that we were kind of snooping on their dating profile versus them telling other people and the word spreading that my wife might be cheating on me. So I feel like, I don't think Maddie would be super pumped if people were spreading rumors.
I think it's on,
like,
the Reddit,
you know, around the town and open for business or whatever. So I think the lesser of two evils is just, like, tell your buddy what you were doing. And unless your wife just doesn't care and you don't care, then that's fine. But I know that, like, me personally, and I know my wife, Maddie, I don't think she'd want people to even think that she was snooping around, because it's just, I don't know, it's just not a good look.
Yeah, not good. I think this is, it's interesting because it's something that I think I would be curious about. Like, I've got friends who post mostly on Twitter that are just, it's like, look at this dude, my buddy posted another dumb thing. I'm probably that friend for a lot of people, but there's some people that are even, for me, or it's like dumb things. Usually talk about, like, how cool they are, or how girls ain't shit, or how this or how that. It's like, it's just like, wow, this is a guy who posts the shit that just, it's just dumb. It's just dumb. I see your thoughts and they're dumb. I like you, but what you're saying to the world is dumb. And so I've always, like, be interesting to be like, what does that guy's dating profile look like? Because that's something your buddies never see, right? Why would they ever see it? So, like, I can understand the urge to want to know what that guy's putting out to the world, especially if it's like, you know, I'd like my dumb Twitter buddies. They'd be like, what's the face you show to women? Because whatever you're showing on Twitter is crazy. So I get the idea of wanting to see it. But I mean, why couldn't you have just made a fucking new, like, Facebook or something? Can't you just do that, like, in a second? Why did you have to use your wife's thing and have it out there? It's just crazy.
That's what I thought think originally.
Poor execution.
I thought they originally just created a fake profile, because that's, you know, I've told this story before, but back when I invented catfishing with my friends in, like, you know, high school, I've done a lot of things in my life. We just created fake MySpace profiles. Like, it wasn't, and I don't know. I mean, I haven't, you know, created any new social media profiles.
Yeah, well, that's maybe, your catfish that's game.
That's good.
Could they have just used her stuff, her email, and then just did a different profile picture?
No, because I think you have to use, listen, this is how it was in Tinder when I was using it in, what, 2013, maybe? You had to use photos from your profile. Like, you couldn't just upload photos that weren't, like, pictures that you had on Facebook.
Yeah, but then you just make a new Facebook. There's like a billion accounts on Facebook. Why can't you make one? Just, it's just like another minute before you make your Hinge thing.
Yeah, just create
instead of
Gmail.
Just using, putting your wife out there and everyone within a 25-mile radius can see that she's on there. I mean, crazy.
Yeah, what was the end game, I guess? Yeah, because, like, the whole point was that you were going to match up with the wife. With your wife was going to match up with the friend. She was going to know. Your friend was going to know. It doesn't seem like this
was
a well
thought
out thing.
Well, I don't think they matched,
thing.
Right? It was, oh, is
they
it?
Had, they
yeah, but I bet you
without matching.
Honestly, though, I bet you the app, when she starts, like, filtering down her options so that they could find the friends, that then she becomes like a match on the other side of it.
Yeah, this was just poor planning.
Yeah, I guess you are a little more stuck here than I thought. I think I was being dismissive, probably because I'm the one that's not married out of the group. That you wouldn't want your group, and then, you know, that. That extra layer of electrons group where it's like, hey, did you hear about so-and-so's wife or whatever? Yeah. Like, I can understand you not wanting that. I personally, but I think I'd have to be married to have a real, like, I just wouldn't care. I would be like, whatever, but I'm not married. So I don't think I'm a good source here. All right. Next email. Kyle's lost McSorley shirts. Hi, Ryan, Kyle, Steve. Big fan of the pod. I tried to get a ticket to Gramercy, but it was not going to happen. All right. I don't have a life advice question at the moment. That's great, man. Sounds like things are going really well. I heard in the last pod some ass stole Kyle's McSorley shirts from the green room. As a New York City transplant from the Bay Area, it would be my pleasure to send Kyle and his wife replacement shirts free of charge. I'm also a big fan of McSorley's and have always taken friends and family to town there when we grab some beers. Just let me know your sizes and address. I would ship them too, and happy to do so on me. Congrats to Kyle and your wife for the wedding.
Wow. Light or dark? Am I right, guy? No, that's okay. She was actually pretty drunk that night. She's not even as upset as I thought she was going to be. So that's okay. She's like, I don't even know if she remembers that we got those shirts. So it's all right. I don't need you to do that. But that was really nice of you. I'll be back at McSorley's whenever I get dragged down to the city. That's for sure. But thank you.
All right.
I don't want to give you my address either.
Okay. No address guy now.
I mean, yeah.
You're at no address. When did you pivot from here's my address for free shit to I don't know that I want to do that anymore?
Well, I'd give it to like companies or guys with small businesses, but just like a guy who's like, hey, man, I've got something I want to send you. Even if it's like a nicely crafted email, I'm just maybe not. But I used to go into the office more. I used to give people the Ringer office, but now like the Spotify thing's so weird. I don't know how that even works. So like I haven't figured out the whole mail forwarding to the Spotify office, but that the old Ringer office, I'd give that one to everyone.
Mm. Yeah. Unless it's a pair of sneakers or Russillo. Those are out the door.
Yeah, well, you didn't really even trust me enough to let me handle that. You just wait till they were gone. You're like, hey, what the fuck is going on with the sneakers? And I'm like, ah, I'm scared. I don't know.
Well, like, I think because I know without knowing. I know that there was a certain group of people that they would see a box of sneakers from me and be like, fuck him. Like I was in charge.
Yeah.
That'll be a story told another
Not
day.
Mad, though. Not mad.
No, very mad still. Not about the sneakers. About a small group of people.
All right.
Woo. Next email. What do you think?
So people at work are trying to fuck my career up. Three people are laughing very hard right now. All right. Let's see. Bachelor party. Want to watch a boxing match. Okay, here we go. 6'2", 210. Basketball comp is Brady Heislip. That's good.
Yeah.
I like that one. That is a really good one. All right. One of my college buddies is getting married, and I was invited to the bachelor party the weekend of July 29th. We're renting a cabin at the lake, have plans to go out Friday night, hang out at the water Saturday. Then I've been told by the best man that we were just going to be chilling and drinking whiskey at the cabin on Saturday night. So the best man's in charge of this. However, that Saturday night's also on the calendar, one of the most highly anticipated bouts since Kyle's wedding. Uh-oh. That was a good joke. 39-0 Bud Crawford against 29-0 Errol Spence. This fight has been years in the making and is the best non-heavyweight boxing match in a long, long time. I wouldn't say I'm the biggest boxing fan, but I'm a huge Bud Crawford fan. He's from Omaha, and so is my dad, so I've followed him for a long time, watching every pay-per-view fight over the last 10 years and even attend a couple fights in person. All right, so to say you're not a huge boxing fan, you've watched everyone. Like, all right, I get the home connection. You are way in on this, guy. You are way in. You've been looking forward to this, but it's also the bachelor party. So the issue I've run into is that no one else going on the bachelor party, including the groom, really cares about this fight. My selfish hope is that I can buy the pay-per-view, take over the TV, watch the fight. Anyone who wants to join me can, but I want to hear your thoughts on, one, is this an asshole move? I know it's not my weekend, and I don't want to ruin their other plans, but I've already been told Saturday night is just a whiskey at the cabin night. I would think a good fight, even for people who don't really care, could enhance the vibes. I actually agree with that. I don't quite understand why you can't have something on TV. Usually TVs are on when people get together. If they are demanding that everyone stand outside or sit on the porch and look at the lake, like
the sound bath,
you could do it before the fight. You could do it after the fight. There's a lot of hours in a day to play with. If only like two of them, maybe not even two, could be even less of the fight. Number two is, how do I go about trying to make this happen? I'm one of the few non-groomsmen that is part of the bachelor party, so I'm definitely aware I'm not a core guy to this groom. Very good point. Great self-awareness. Thank you for adding that context. But I am really close with the best man and some of the groomsmen, so I'm not just some random fringe guy. Sounds like you're not either. Again, do I try to build this into the itinerary ahead of time, wait until the weekend and bring it up, or do I just not tell anyone, go hide for an hour or so and watch it on my phone? I really don't understand why this would be that big of an issue. I've done the bachelor party at the hotel. I've done the bachelor party where everybody's in the same house. By the way, like, how many nights are you drinking? Is it just Friday? Are you guys going Thursday, Friday, Saturday? Because there's a really good chance if you're going back to back the first two nights and then Saturdays, they're going to want to watch this, you know? I also don't like the guy that's so in charge of this, which is not what you're saying you are. I think you've made that case. But the best man whose call all of this stuff is, like, you know, I've had different friends from different groups, and you're like, what am I supposed to do? Stand next to you more this weekend to prove that I like you? To prove that I'm all in on this? Because, again, I was always the dude who would take off and, like, goes to another room and watch a game or whatever. And then it became like just mandatory that I was like, look, at some point I got to get my eyes on this shit here. I think you're totally fine. I don't know. Like, if you're not getting good feedback that whiskey Saturday late cap, like Saturday is like only these things and that's the way it's going to go because I'm in charge and all that stuff. Like, if that's the resistance that you're already getting before you do this, I would just wait it out. I would let the weekend play it out because I know dudes pretty well. And if you're going to come out hot early, some guys maybe even hit it during the day. Dudes are going to be worn out. A couple bodies are going to fall. They're not even going to, like, I just don't think this isn't your dad where he's making you do something where it's like, it's family time and family time is the most important thing.
Put your phone away.
Right. That's not what this is. You're all adults here. I'd say just order the fight. Let's make sure there's a way to cover it on the rental and all that so no one can bring that back to you. Like, oh, you ordered the fight and then he didn't even do this. And now the guy in the Airbnb and all this shit's happening. I think you're totally fine going, ordering it, maybe even throwing it around to a couple guys casually if you don't get great feedback. But then again, if these guys know you that well, as you said, you're not a fringe guy, you're not a core guy, but they know you. You're like, oh, dude, he's watched every one of his fights. Dad's from the same town. Went to a place. Have you even been to Omaha, dude? 311? So I think you're totally within your rights, knowing how these bachelor parties go, that guys are on absolute fumes on the last night. There's probably going to be a couple other people be like, yeah, I'll watch this fight with you. Maybe a couple shekels on the side. Mm-hmm. So I don't think you have to worry about any of this other than best man, who I don't know that you've mapped it out that he's a complete dictator here. But some guys can be dictators, and then they say it has to be this way, this way, this way, this way, and then all of that shit falls apart when dudes are together drinking for multiple days in a row.
Can attest. But I'd say you could even, like, if you are close with the best man, so you could have floated it to him, but if you're saying you'd rather not, I think you could have just had it that day and been like, look what I got for us, boys. Look at my contribution to this awesome weekend. You could do it like that, too.
That's a great right. call.
Unless outside cabin Lake Whiskey planner.
Well, you guys, you know, on your way in for more beers or something, I'll just be in here watching the fight for this. You know, you don't have to watch every single fight on the card, right? I mean, you really only care about this one thing. You can mute it for the rest of the time, whatever. I don't think asking for those a couple minutes that the fight, you know, that the fight, that specific fight's going to be out is too much.
Yeah, I think first off, whiskey night is like the perfect night for this. If this was a different night, if it was like get after it night where you're playing drinking games, then like that's more of a problem to me. But the whiskey night is the night. I mean, we did this at the bachelor party I was just at in Maine. It was the Sunday. We had been drinking the two nights before. It was our last night there, and we was kind of like a chill whiskey night hanging out, and we watched like the Stanley Cup finals, and it was awesome because everybody was like not in full crazy mode. Everyone's kind of winding down. We got to drive back the next day. And it's like, it's a great thing to just sit around and like watch something with your dudes. I would say like a boxing fight is sneaky, like the best sporting event you could watch at a bachelor party too. Cause it's fighting. Dudes are kind of like in that cannibalistic kind of thing. Or not cannibalistic. They're in like, I don't know. They're just like in that like primal thing where they're just like, all right, we're with a bunch of dudes. Like, let's watch somebody, two guys fight each other. I think you can get some people, there's some camaraderie there. I think this is a good idea. I think more people, even if you're not into boxing, will be like, yeah, I want to watch this fight. And if nobody else wants to watch and you want to do it on your own, there's plenty of guys that just disappear for an hour or two on a bachelor party. So I don't think either way, I don't think it's that big of a deal. It's not like the guy, like, remember the guy at the live show who was going, what was it? His like girl, he was going to Ireland for his girl's grandma's like 90th birthday party or something. He wanted to watch the Jets game. This is not that. Like, you're fine here. That's way more like, whoa, I don't know if you actually watch the game. This, you should watch the game either way. It's just whether or not you're going to watch it with your buddies or not.
The only reason, unless he's completely overthinking it, which could be the case, right? Or he's hinting at us that the best man kind of feels like, no, because there will be those people. Hopefully you can avoid them, but there are going to be those people where, like, when they're in charge of things and they're planning it all out, they take it as like the massive insult that it isn't. When it's like, I actually kind of like going to go do this. Now, granted, like if the guy organized a golf part of the weekend and you're like, I'm actually gonna go for a hike, like that's a fuck you to him planning out the numbers, probably doing a deposit at the golf course. Like, you know, that I think sometimes when you're younger too, you're like, wait, how does it work? You're like, yeah, we all make a deposit and then we all get the reservations and we all go, and like the numbers are super important when it comes to golf, and like you'd be like, oh yeah, not gonna make it. You know, like that, that either you figure that out or you stop getting invited to stuff. This seems to be, I think we've talked about it too much already. I think it's a very, very simple move here that at some point, like the equivalent is if you guys had late flights, or I don't know, you could say it differently, but like what if it was a divisional round of the NFL playoffs? What if it was conference championship? Like at some point, somebody's going to go watch this. This might be different because it's boxing and it's not the NFL, but a guy watching an hour plus of a sporting event during a bachelor party when you're not going to have that much time where you're forced to sit next to each other. So I think you're fine, dude. I wouldn't even bring it up. I would just go like maybe day of, be like, hey, I'm definitely going to order the fight tonight. Like, and I'll pay for it. So whatever. And if any of you guys want to throw some money down, let me know. And then, you know, I'll come out and have whiskeys before the fight when the undercard, I'll come out, whatever. Like, I think it's weird if guys are going to be like, no, you have to hang out with us at 7. Like, you have to hang out with us. You have to sit outside with us because that's what we're here for this weekend. That would be excessive and annoying. That's life advice. Thanks to Kyle. Thanks to Steve. Enjoy the rest of your holiday. And we'll be back on Thursday.